Welcome into The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your home for Chiefs football.
Touchdown, Kansas City!
And your home for Royals baseball.
Fastball hit high in the air, deep left field, way gone into the bleachers. A two-run homer for Bobby Witt Jr.
Watch The Drive by subscribing on our YouTube channel or listen on demand with the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This show is always going to stand on principles. Dippin' Dots are incredible. Red Lobster is the best restaurant that America has to offer. And baked beans are trash.
You're listening to Kansas City's FM Sports Station, 96.5 The Fan. Here's CDOT.
I spent a lot of time with my grandmother when I was a kid. And I would say that we spent a lot of time watching three things. She had this very extensive VHS collection, and I just spent a lot of time watching movies with her. We spent a lot of time watching talk shows, watched a lot of Sally, Jesse, Raphael, spent a lot of time watching Ricky Lake or Jenny Jones. You know, I grew up on 90s talk shows, as I imagine many of you did. From time to time, I would sit and I would watch the soap operas with her. You know, All My Children, Guiding Light, General Hospital. We are currently living in a soap opera, which is the Darren Peterson saga. We have yet another chapter of it that we'll get to. Let's do this. Another day, another dollar, another edition of The Drive. You're listening to The Drive on 96.5 The Fan. My name is Carrington Harrison. Happy to be here with you. Rob is here taking you up until 6 o'clock. Rob usually wears something KU related. He normally has a hoodie or a hat or something Kansas related. Now, he is rocking Adidas, and I'm just guessing they give you that hoodie whenever you sign up for season tickets, but he has no KU apparel today. Boy, do we got to talk about Kansas. We'll talk about Kansas basketball here coming up in a bit. There's a lot of other things that we need to get to. What if I told you that Ron Artest, yes, Meta World Peace, says that he wants to be the head men's basketball coach at Kansas State University? Yes, the guy who started Malice at the Palace, Queensbridge owned, shout out to Ron Artest, NBA legend. Ron Artest wants to be the next head men's basketball coach at Kansas State University. We'll talk about that. We'll go through some hypothetical trades that have been thrown out as we are getting ready for the start of the NFL season. I saw a very fun Twitter conversation. What is the most boomer complaint that you had? We'll go through some of them and we'll just complain about the way things are. That's one of my favorite activities to do on this show. We're going to have a lot of fun. We will get to the latest edition of the Darren Peterson saga, but before we do that, I need you guys to do me a couple of favors. Number one, I need you listening to The Drive each day at 2 o'clock right here on 96.5 The Fan. Number two, I need you to tell one friend to check out the show. And number three, and most importantly, I need you to remember that the open of the show each day is brought to you by our friends over at The Other Place. Tomorrow, when you are trying to figure out lunch, it's a little bit past lunchtime now. I need you to go stop by and see our friends over at The Other Place. They have 12 items that are $8.99. Get yourself a burger. Get yourself a couple slices of pizza. Get yourself a sandwich, a soup, and a sandwich. If you are in the lunchtime groove tomorrow, be sure to go see our friends over at The Other Place with 5 locations all around Kansas City. All right. Let's start with Darren Peterson. And I promise you guys that I'm not a hater. I understand that I cheer for the University of Missouri, who won, by the way, but I am coming to this as a basketball fan. I'm coming to this as someone who wants to see Darren Peterson play. I saw Darren Peterson go play in high school. I laid eyes on Darren Peterson before Rob ever did. So I'm coming to this from a place of love. I'm coming to this from a place of concern. We all want to see the kid play. But at some point, you have to deal with the reality of the situation. So if you didn't watch the game yesterday, that's okay. Basically, let me tell you what happened. Kansas was cruising. They are a much better team than Oklahoma State. They had a pretty commanding lead in the game. Darren Peterson was fantastic in the first half of the game. He was doing that Darren Peterson thing. You know, It's just silky smooth. He's getting to the rack. He's rebounding. He's knocking down threes. It is very obvious that Darren Peterson is the best player on the floor. Kansas then comes out for the start of the second half. You're thinking, all right, you know what? It's going to be a nice, calm night. Until it wasn't. Darren Peterson hits a three. He then looks at Coach Self and gives him the I'm done look. He then gets on the exercise bike, and that is all she wrote for Darren Peterson. We've been here before. I don't really have much new commentary on Darren Peterson. I'm not here to just beat you guys over the head for 4 hours about how this is the worst thing that's ever happened at the University of Kansas. It's not. This is still a very good, very talented basketball team, and they can still accomplish a lot of their goals. My question to anybody who cheers for Kansas, and if anybody who is associated with the Kansas basketball program, I want you to hear this message. When is enough enough? Because I am just doing the very simple, from the outside, say it out loud test. There was an issue in November. There was an issue in December. There was an issue in January. We have now had multiple issues in February. Is the hope now with Darren Peterson, despite everything that I've just said, that he is going to have the ability to put it together for 3 weeks in March, and March is going to be without incident? That just doesn't seem very realistic to me. There's a saying, at some point you have to take people at face value, and when people tell you who they are, you need to believe them. We have had this one and done rule in place in college basketball since 2006. We have had 20 years now of one and done classes. Give me the comparisons or examples that you feel most resemble this Darren Peterson. Because we were going back and forth about this on social media, and the examples are not encouraging. I think this is very comparable to the Ben Simmons situation. And Ben Simmons at LSU showed us his character and showed us exactly who he was, and we just didn't want to believe it. We were looking at 6'10", point guard, silky smooth, could get to the basket, great passer, long, rangy defender, and we were looking at all of the positives, and we were not looking that the check engine light was flashing the entire time he was at LSU. The exact same thing is happening again 10, 12 later, years later with Darren Peterson. The exact same signs, the exact same warning signs, the exact same discussions that we were having with Ben Simmons, we are now having with Darren Peterson. Does Darren Peterson want it? And we are getting too many examples to me that at least at Kansas, the answer is no. And I just don't know how this team that is still very much in the conversation to win the Big 12, that is still very much in the conversation to make a deep run in the NCAA tournament, how you can continue to go through life and go through this college basketball season with the amount of uncertainty that they have about their best player. And then I'm listening to Bill Self, and he says, well, we didn't anticipate this.
Well, we've had it more than a couple of times. I didn't anticipate that tonight at all. I thought he was good to go. But obviously, we only got 18 minutes out of him. And that's disappointing because he could have had a really big night. One thing about it is it's happened often enough that our guys have learned to play without him, even though that's not the way we want to play. But that's certainly something that we're not unaccustomed to, right now.
Bill, I don't know how you can tell anybody that you were anticipating Darren playing and that you're surprised that he asked out of the game and was good to go. He's been doing this all season. He's done that now twice in the last 5 KU games. He did that in the game against BYU. He opted out of the Arizona game. He checked out of the Oklahoma State game yesterday. I would always anticipate that this is a possibility. You guys know that I love dating analogies. We love relationship analogies on this show. If you are interested in a young lady and she continues to find ways to get out of the date, you got a date set. Oh, hey, Friday night, I'm going to take you. We're going to have a really nice dinner. You know, I got a nice plan. I got us a nice reservation. Man, I can't wait to see you. I can't wait to take you out. And then 3 hours before the date, she tells you something came up. Hey, it's one time. It happens. Life happens. You got to understand that. Hey, let's reschedule. Okay, you know what? Let's reschedule to next Wednesday. I'm open again. I'll be free. Hey, you know what? Let's do something else, man. Let's go play mini golf. Let's go do this, man. I know it's going to be a great time. Man, I'm looking forward to it. You guys are texting back and forth the week, building anticipation. An hour before you're supposed to go out, hey, I hate to do this to you. I'm not going to be able to make our date. Why? What happened? I don't know. Something came up. At some point, you have to come to the realization that maybe this person is not as interested in you that you are with them. I'm at the point with Derek Peterson, and I've been there. Now, maybe I got there later than some of you guys did, but I have been there since the Arizona game. This just continues to happen too frequently to me to believe that Darren Peterson's heart is in playing basketball this year at Kansas. And maybe that is an unfair thing to say about a 19-year-old, but when you have done this at every single turn, and this is something that we have dealt with now for 4 months, we have been having this conversation. There has not been a single stretch of basketball this season with the University of Kansas in which this has not been an issue. It'd be one thing if this was an issue in the first 10 games of the season. He now has a clean bill of health. And if I was bringing this up, you guys can say I'm overreacting. Look, that was in the past. This was not in the past. Every 2 weeks, we have the exact same conversation about Darren Peterson. So it's not about the rest of the team being able to live with this. It is, we are now heading into the most important stretch of the year in college basketball. This is what you work for. This is what you go through summer workouts for. This is what you grind for in the non-con. This is what you are. You are accumulating all of this so you can put your best foot forward down the stretch with games against Houston, games against Arizona, in Kansas City in the Big 12 tournament, getting ready for the NCAA tournament so you potentially have a chance to do something special and hang a banner up like some of the great Kansas basketball teams. You cannot tell me with any amount of certainty that you were confident that Darren Peterson is going to be there for that. Not when you need him. So that's where we are with Kansas. We are in the exact same place that we've been with Darren Peterson. If you were talking about beating a dead horse, I don't disagree with you. And the horse keeps getting up. Just stay down. Darren Peterson is the one that continues to make this a story. I'm cool talking about it as long as the kid's going to play. But it just, we are in a never-ending cycle of a comedy that continues to give you the exact same punchline at the end of it. This has to be the absolute most frustrating thing if you cheer for the University of Kansas, that you expected to get this all-time great talent, and he shows you that time and time again. Darren Peterson, in my opinion, is the best college basketball scorer that we have seen since Kevin Durant. When it is working, it is absolutely amazing, and he is everything that they told us he was going to be, but the negatives are so glaring. And right there, staring you right in the face, at some point, you just have to listen to the negatives. And at some point, KU is either going to have to blank or get off the pot. You either just got to accept that this is what it's going to be and that there could potentially be a game in the Sweet 16 in which Darren Peterson plays 16 minutes and you got to figure out a way to make that work against a very good football or basketball team, excuse me, or you just got to walk away from this and say, we can't do this anymore. This is not sustainable. I guess Kansas has been doing it for this long. They're 20-6. They only have 3 losses in the Big 12. They have been making it work, but the stakes are about to get much bigger very, very quickly. I want to hear from some experts coming up on the other side. Matt Tate is going to join us in the 3 o'clock hour. We'll get his take on everything. We'll also switch gears to the National Football League. There is a proposed trade idea with Trey McDuffie. I want to run by you guys. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5 The Fan.
Welcome back into the show. My name is Carrington Harrison. Very happy to be here with you on this wonderful, wonderful Thursday. I want to read this text really quickly, and I want to get your opinions on this, Rob. Someone just texted in. I think this has been a common theme. I'd be a lot more mad about this situation if we were losing, responding to Darren Peterson. I guess I would just point out, I guess, one thing. I would say in the biggest games that KU has had away from Allen Fieldhouse, a major reason of why they lost that game was Darren Peterson. Now, and Allen, it's a completely different story. But if we are talking about the games that you would deem to be the biggest, Rob, they lost the game to Duke. Did Darren Peterson play in that game? These are the kind of teams you got to beat to win the national championship. They just got blown out a couple of days ago against Iowa State. Granted, on the road. What was the biggest reason on why Coach Self said they lost that game? Man, continuity. We didn't get a chance to practice. Our team... a major reason of why your team is disjointed is because your best player is not there. So I certainly understand the sentiment, and I'm not here to paint it like everything is just wrong with Kansas, but I would say in their biggest, most important games and the games that you are going to need to win the national championship and the kinds of teams you are going to have to beat, you just haven't had your best player really available for any of those games. The win against Arizona is fantastic. The win against BYU is fantastic. Man, they ain't playing the NCAA tournament at Allen Fieldhouse. And it's just going to be a completely different environment when you're asking your team to potentially do this in neutral site situations, and you don't know if you can count on your top guy to be able to do it. That's why I think when you're heading to March, you kind of got to know what you're going into March with from a positive and a negative standpoint. That's where I think it matters most with Darren Peterson. You're a KU fan, Rob. What did you make of what happened last night?
I mean, it's frustrating because it's more of the same. And it's just last night, similar to the BYU game, was a microcosm of the Darren Peterson experience. Because when he was on the floor, he was sensational. There are not enough words to use to describe how good he was last night. He had 23 points in 18 minutes. I saw a stat that he is the most efficient scorer in college basketball. He's averaging 20 points a night in 26 minutes a night. He is clearly sensational. But that's never the story with Darren Peterson. That's never what we talk about with Darren Peterson. And I'm not saying we're wrong. It's another game where he hits a shot, he checks out, he gets on the exercise bike, he sits down, and he's done. I don't know what the answer is, but now it's been November, December, January, and we're basically through February, and it's been a common theme. At this point, it is what it is. This is going to be what we experience in March as Kansas fans. There's going to be a second round game or a Sweet 16 game or a whatever game where he is hooping, and then he's just going to be done. He's going to stop playing. He's going to be on the Theragun. He's going to be on the exercise bike. He's going to be sitting on the bench. I know what's going to happen. Will it cost them a game in the tournament? Probably. But I just, at this point, I can't anticipate anything other than what we've seen. This is what we keep seeing. This is what I keep anticipating seeing. And it's pull your hair out frustrating because when he's playing, he's so good.
I want to play a couple pieces of audio, and then we'll get to this Trent McDuffie proposed trade idea. We'll get to it here coming up in just a bit. I want you guys to hear from a player perspective in Jamal Mashburn and also a coaching perspective with Darren Peterson. Here is Jamal Mashburn on TNT.
I think the interesting part is with this NIL era and the transfer portal, this has become much more transactional than we really thought about from the standpoint that we can't separate the conversation of them winning a championship and him going to the NBA because it's a transition year for him at the end of the day. If he can go straight from high school and go to the pros, he probably would have done it at the end. That's how I see it. Yeah. So they really need him to win a championship. But if he's going to get in the NCAA tournament and you're going to load manage that part of it,
wild.
Why even be a part of it at that?
That is Jamal Mashburn. That's his thoughts on what's happening with Darren Peterson. That's the player perspective. Let's hear from Bruce Pearl. He also was on TNT.
It's a business, and I think the kids in the locker room understand he's got a chance to be number one. They want him to be healthy. You know, I think times have changed a little bit. Years ago, there might have been guys in the locker room that were really taking him to task a little bit, like, hey, man, we need you to win this championship. But they all recognize it might be just bigger than that. So
all right.
I'm disappointed, and this is not the last we're going to hear on this story.
This is something that I would push back on, and I don't think that people are – I think people want to wrongly associate this with the one-and-done rule or the players, and I don't think that people are maybe willing to put this specifically on Darren Peterson. The top text we have, Darren Peterson is what's wrong with the NBA. These players don't even care to go to college and try when they have a top 10 guaranteed pick. We have to get rid of the run and done rule. It's pathetic. It's hurting the NBA. They need to go multiple years like college football. I strongly disagree. We have had this one and done rule in place for 20 seasons. The one and done rule has been in place since 2006. This is not a new rule. Tell me the other player that has been doing what we think Darren Peterson is doing. Now, if your argument is, well, the NIL thing just came around, I also think we are now painting it like Darren Peterson is the only one out here getting money. You are not getting five-star recruits unless you are dropping off the bag. So If you are upset with the current system, okay, that's fine. This current system worked for Cooper Flagg, who is having a phenomenal rookie season as the Favoriton Rookie of the Year. He played last year at Duke, got them to the Final Four. He is currently averaging as a 19-year-old 20.6 rebounds and 4 assists as a teenager in the NBA. This current system seems to be working very fine for AJ DeBanta. It's working for Koa Pete. It's working for Cam Boozer. It's working for Caleb Williams. We can go up and down the list. Like, one of the reasons why we are having this conversation about tanking in the NBA is because the freshman class is so good. The only team that's having this level of problems with their one and done freshman is Kansas. He's the only one. The one and done rule, I think, has ultimately been good for everybody. I think it's been good for college basketball, and you get a chance to see these guys at the level. I think it's been good for brand building. I also think it's great for the NBA. You get a year of evaluation to watch these guys play at the absolute highest level. Take a guy like DJ Wagner, for example. Rob, you remember him, number one overall player. Everybody thought he was just going to dominate college basketball. He had to go to college. He then went to college. He's still currently in college because he wasn't that guy. So sometimes the one and done rule saves NBA teams from being silly and drafting on potential. So, yes, I guess both things could be right. If Darren Peterson had the ability to go directly from prep school to the NBA, he would have taken it. We wouldn't be in this situation. But now I think we want to make a very blanket statement about NIL and the one and done rule when I just think this is a Darren Peterson problem. Like, we're going to go through this later in the show. I think these basketball players want to play a lot more than the perception is with these guys. You don't have a scenario in which Anthony Edwards is just playing 45 games in the NBA and I don't care about the rest of the games. You're not getting these situations with Jason Tatum. I know this might sound crazy. I think basketball players want to play basketball. That's what they do. That's what they know. I think we're having this conversation with Darren Peterson because it is so jarring, because he just seems so lackadaisical about it despite his incredible ability at it. But I do not think that this is some widespread one-and-done rule NIL problem. I think this is a Darren Peterson problem.
To your point, one of the reasons I agree with you is I think it's disingenuous by fans to say, well, he's just trying to collect an NIL check and head to the pros. On Kansas alone, there's a lot of guys cashing NIL checks.
Everybody.
Floyd Badunga's a pro one day. I don't think it's next year, but he's a pro one day. Floyd Badunga's not free. I use him as the example because we know he jumped in the portal and flirted with Bruce Pearl. He did not come back to Kansas because he loves Kansas. He came back to Kansas because the paycheck was good. Bryson Tiller, at the end of this season, he's going to have a choice. Does he want the Kansas paycheck or the pro paycheck? I think he should come back. But he's going to come back and play because he's getting paid. There are kids on K-State right now. P.J. Haggerty's making a ton of money at K-State. There are kids at every school in the country making money. It is not a matter of I get my NIL and I cash out and go get the big money in the pros. Because it is not systemic the way you say. It is just one player dealing with it. Which does lead me to think maybe the one player is hurt. And I think the one player has a problem of what is hurt versus what is injured. I think Darren Peterson really struggles with that. But we can name 20 to 25 guys in the college basketball right now who are going to be pros, who are getting paychecks. And guess what? They're playing every night.
Yeah. And I understand that Peterson is making more. You do not play major power four basketball anymore and don't get paid.
He makes less than DeBanta, who plays every night.
100%.
A lot less than DeBanta.
Like, this is not a scenario in which Darren Peterson is the only one getting paid and nobody else on Kansas is getting paid. I think you would be shocked at how much everybody is making. I'm not sure if you can field a competitive basketball team for less than $10 million at this level. Like, all in all. So if you think Darren's getting two, break down the rest of the money, I don't know if you could field a very, competitive at a high level. I don't think you can win the Big 12 with less than $10 million in cash. I think you need that in order to build a successful basketball team. And that's why the Jerome Tang buyout was such a big deal. Hey, we can either pay this $18 million out or we could pump this into a basketball team and have one of the most expensive basketball teams in college basketball. That's where I think the money comes into play. We'll get back to college hoops here coming up in a bit. Rob, I want to go through this proposed trade idea from Bill Barnwell. So he has about 8 proposed NFL trades. He has one regarding Trent McDuffie. The Rams would get Trent McDuffie. They also would get the Chiefs' 5th round pick, which is pick 146. So the Rams would get Trent McDuffie. They also would get the 146th pick. They would trade a first-round pick. I am guessing because the Rams have two first-round picks, they are going to keep the 13th overall pick, and they are going to trade the 29th overall pick for Trent McDuffie. I am going to guess before I even ask you, just because I know you, you will take any trade for Trent McDuffie that includes a first-round pick in this year's draft. Not a future, but I am guessing, unless it's Buffalo or Denver or one of those kind of teams, I think you are willing to take any trade that involves Trent McDuffie if you get a first-round pick back in return.
Yes, 100% yes. I think the value of Trent McDuffie is probably what I would definitely take, no doubt, is probably somewhere between pick 25 and 40 is probably if I'm ballparking it. So if I'm getting pick 29, I don't mind giving up a fifth on the back end. I would do this deal for Trent McDuffie if I'm getting a first round pick. Yes, sign me up.
Yeah, I think most Chiefs fans actually run to go take this deal on Trent McDuffie. I think most Chiefs fans are running to take the 29th overall pick for Trent McDuffie. I don't think that that's bad value. I also think if we are having this conversation, if you are going to do it, I just don't think there's too many teams that would make this move for Trent McDuffie. If you are looking for a first round pick. Now, I think there's a bunch that would make this for a second round pick. And that obviously opens the net on who you think you could potentially get. Like, I'm looking right now at the NFL draft. Maybe Detroit at 17. That seems a little bit rich, in my opinion, to try to go get for Trent McDuffie. I'm just trying to think of realistic teams. Like, you're not trading him to the Chargers at 22. And then there's some other teams that I'm not sure they would want to add that contract to him. A team like the Rams, if they end up trading him for a first round pick, they just make the most sense because they have two of them. They get to keep 13. They made that trade last year with Atlanta. I believe that was for James Pierce. So they have the 13th overall pick. I don't think the Rams, they're not trading that one for McDuffie. They could trade out of 13, pick up some additional assets and do it that way. But I think they're going to keep hold of the 13th overall pick. The Rams, to me, they just make the most sense given the fact that they have two first round picks. I also don't think you're getting a first for Trent McDuffie. I think you're probably going to get somewhere in that second round if you want to do it. It's a Tampa Bay at 44. It's one of those teams. I'm not saying I'd be surprised if you got a one for Trent McDuffie. I think he's one of the better corners in the National Football League. I just don't think you get a one for Trent McDuffie if he's truly available on the market.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I would love this Bill Barnwell trade. I think Trent McDuffie does not hold the value as a trade piece that some Chiefs fans think he do. I think he is, because he's basically an expiring contract, for using an NBA term, I know you can tag him and there's another year. I understand all those things. But because he's essentially a expiring contract, his value is diminished. You have a chance to sign him in free agency in the next year, year and a half. So I would run and I would sign up for a first round pick. I would run and sign up for, I'm just picking the Jets giving a second round pick. I'm just ballpark picking a random bad team that's going to pick in the late 30s. I think anything less than 40, I'm probably not making the move, but pick 25 to 40 for Trent McDuffie is exceptional value for a player of his caliber.
I do have this question, and I don't know if we have the answer to this, but it's in the blurb when discussing this trade. This is from Bill Barnwell. I'd rather see the Chiefs give an extension to one of their top players, but until Veach pays a corner top-tier money, that I'm not counting on that to occur. The Chiefs have just spent $112 million in cash at cornerback since the start of 2018. That's the third lowest of any team in the National Football League. So this is not a team that spends significant money at the position. They usually only have cornerbacks on rookie contracts, or you got a guy like Christian Fulton who you paid a little bit, but you in no way broke the banks to go get a player like Christian Fulton. I will say this, at least with how they want to build this. If you want to trade Trent McDuffie, okay. I would pay Trent McDuffie, but I don't think trading him is the worst thing in the world. You then need to reinvest in pass rush, and I mean immediate day one pass rush. You cannot be deficient at getting to the quarterback like the Chiefs were last season and also trade your number one corner and have your number two corner potentially hitting free agency, and then he can walk away too because the dollar amount is too high. You got to pick which one you want to do. So either you're going to invest on the back half of your defense and invest in the corners, or you need to spend significant resources for immediate help at pass rush. To me, you can't do both of those things this offseason.
I agree. I think and it's something we've talked about on the show. This is not some earth-shattering, I'm breaking new ground take. The Chiefs' best way to acquire more picks in the draft is Trent McDuffie. But the second best way is trading out of the ninth pick overall. If you're going to do one of those things, I don't think you can do the other. So, like, for your point about acquiring pass rush immediately, if you're going to take Bill Barnwell's hypothetical trade, that's great. Pick number nine needs to be Reuben Bain. Pick number nine needs to be David Bailey. It needs to be a guy who on day one, the expectation is they have a pass rusher. If you are going to trade pick nine and you want to move back, that's fine. You then need to turn around and extend Trent McDuffie. I think this offseason, there are two paths to add picks. I don't think you can be doing both because then you are acquiring a bunch of depth pieces more so than immediate impact starters.
Yeah, someone on the text line sent this in. C-Dot, I'd rather trade McDuffie for a first-round pick next year than this year. The 27 draft is supposedly significantly better. I don't think you can give up Trent McDuffie's rookie contract for a pick next year.
I also think, and I apologize for interrupting, one of the reasons why next year's draft is better, more quarterbacks, which does not matter at all to Kansas City. That's how people judge drafts. Is it a good quarterback draft? That means good draft. This is viewed as a bad draft because there's one quarterback, maybe one and a half, depending on how you view Ty Simpson.
Yeah, because just in this scenario, like, let's say the Chiefs have made the determination they're not going to pay Trent McDuffie. Like, let's say they've already come to that conclusion. Then if I'm them, I try to play out and get a first-round pick this year, and maybe the Rams give you a first-round pick this year. I then keep him. I make him play under the $13.6 million, and therefore you will have Trent McDuffie on a five-year, around $17 million contract. I think everybody's cool with that. 5 years, $17 million. I would then franchise tag him at the end of the season and trade him the same way you did Snead. Now, you're not going to get a first-round pick for a franchise tag corner in that scenario. And you remember, back when you and I were arguing this with Snead, we were telling people, hey, you're not franchise tagging a corner, and I'm not giving you a first-round pick for him, so now I got to pay him top money. No, you got to pick which one you want. So if you're telling me that they ended up getting a future first-round pick for it, I would say in the short term, you made yourself worse for a future asset. Just keep him. Keep him this year. Franchise tag him at the end of this season. Go get a second-round pick. Go lock in a third-round pick, and let's not play compensatory pick roulette. And you maximize all of Trent McDuffie's contract. That would be my advice. I also don't think they're trading him for a future first-round pick anyway, but since the course of it, if you had to ask me today what I think the Chiefs get for Trent McDuffie, let's say that we wake up tomorrow and we get the breaking news sounder from Ian Rappaport that the Chiefs have traded Trent McDuffie. I think they get a second-round pick and a fifth-round pick for him. I think that's what he's worth.
Is that
I understand what Sauce got. I think that's what Trent McDuffie is worth. I think he's worth a decent two, not a low end two. I think he's worth a decent two and a fifth round pick, and maybe you swap pick somewhere else. That's what I think he's worth.
I think you also have to consider, as agents get involved, you're going to be trading him to a team that can immediately sign him. Similar to how Frank Clark got traded to the Chiefs, and like the breaking news came out, hey, Frank Clark's a Chief. And like 10 minutes later, Ian Rappaport tweeted out, he now has a mega extension in Kansas City. That's part of the, you know, part of the equation here with Trent McDuffie. You can't trade him to a team with no cap space. I think what happens is they trade him. We get the breaking news sounder. He's a member of team blank. It's a second round pick, maybe a late first round pick. And then you get a breaking news sounder 2 seconds later that he signs a contract comparable to Pat Surtain. Like, I don't think the Chiefs are trading him to a team that cannot lock him up long term. I think those two things are coinciding. So if you're making hypothetical trades, keep your eye on cap space because he's about to get paid by someone.
Coming up on the other side, sometimes you guys have the answers to things that I don't have the answer to. This next segment is going to be one of those things. I'll tell you what it is. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your home for Chiefs football. 96.5 The Fan.
All right, Rob. I want to have a semi-serious conversation about something. A semi-serious conversation. We talk about food a lot on this show. Well, why? Because everybody eats. Yes, we all watch sports. We also all eat, too. So that's why we talk about it. We all got opinions on food. You like this place. You don't like this place. You get recommendations of this place. You want people to stay away from this place. Food unifies us in the world. I don't know how I just randomly stumbled across this, but I read like this deep dive about Red Robin today. And the deep dive about Red Robin is that Red Robin stock in 2015, Rob, was $92 a share. Today, if you want Red Robin stock, it is at $3.61. And the story was just detailing all of the mistakes that Red Robin made to get it to this point. And to turn it back around, it was then talking about how Chili's has been so successful over the last 5 years. Now, I do not have an answer to this. You guys know what my chain restaurant is. We don't have to get into that. You guys know. If I'm going to a chain restaurant, you already know which one it is. Rob, I think I've maybe been to Chili's one time in my life.
Ever?
I don't think I've really spent a lot of time going to Chili's. We didn't have one in Joplin, so I just didn't really go in college. When I was a child, we either went to Applebee's or we went to Red Lobster. I can't think of too many times that I've been to Chili's. Just wasn't really my chain. Maybe that was your chain restaurant. I'm not saying anything wrong with it. That's just not one that I've been to a bunch. How did Chili's do it? Do you have a good answer? Like, I was reading it, and they were, you know, kind of giving some different reasons, but I'm curious to hear from the people. 913-586-7965. Because I do think over the last, I don't know, 3 to 5 years, it seems like Chili's has become kind of cool in some ways. Texas Roadhouse has become kind of cool in some ways. Like, there are some chains that are thriving right now. There's some chains that are dying off. I was reading another story about Wendy's. Now, Wendy's is going to have to close like 200 restaurants, and they're calling this a rebuilding year in 2026. I didn't know Wendy's were the New York Jets all of a sudden. I don't mind Wendy's. I don't mind a little Baconator. Have absolutely no clue with it. Rob, how did Chili's do it? How were they able to turn things around?
That's a great question. My knee-jerk answer is they were big on social media. Now, they weren't themselves posting on social media, but it became a phenomenon that they had things that people wanted to try on social media. I know you're not a Chili's person, but they had these Nashville hot mozzarella sticks, which were the ultimate talking point on TikTok for a while. It was a giant brick of cheese dipped in Nashville hot sauce. They then, you know, started getting people to come in and try those. They then added it to their triple dipper combo. They then talked about how their triple dipper is like the best deal in restaurants. Like, I think they did a real good job of guerrilla marketing, getting people to see videos of this interesting food item. And then once they got in the door, parlaying that into success. Like, when was the last time you thought or heard about a new food item at Red Robin? You haven't. You know about the brick of cheese over at Chili's. I think they guerrilla marketed themselves well.
I'm sitting here and I'm reading some of the answers. So somebody said location, menu, and atmosphere. Another place says their prices are really good. My wife and I used to go. We could get an appetizer meal. We could get a dessert for around $25. People are really pointing to value. I do think that we are reaching a portion of society in which, I mean, we all feel this way. I feel this way. You feel this way. This is not, I think, unique to anybody. There are so many places that feel like they are trying to take advantage of you and price gouge you and just take more and more from you that if a place offers you quality and you feel like you get a deal, that's where you're going to go. And I do think that Chili's has found like a really good window of, hey, come here, get a bite to eat, get something to drink. We're not going to hit you over the head with price, and you're going to like the food that you have. And then when the check comes out, it's not going to be $80. We're going to hit you. You're going to have a good time. You're going to like the vibe. You're going to like the music. We're going to hit you for about $35 to $40, and then you can go on the rest of your day. That is a good strategy that got them back in the game.
I also think someone on the text line points this out, and I 100% agree. The other chain restaurants are trying to be entree, sit-down, meal places. You know what Chili's is? Drinks and appetizers. That's what they've leaned into. Like, if you went and polled 100 Kansas Cityans, hey, what's the best thing at Chili's? You know what you're not going to hear? Hey, the burger. You're going to hear the triple dipper over and over and over again. Especially a big platter with a bunch of appetizers on it, and you can get drinks in that, and you can have yourself a nice little meal at Chili's. No harm, no foul. You're out of there not hurting your wallet. I think Chili's leaned into what they are pretty hard. Olive Garden's trying to be high-end Italian. Red Robin tried to be gourmet burgers. Chili's doesn't mess around with that. Chili's is appetizer drink spot, and that is going to get people in the door.
I do think a big part is just kind of finding your lane and what you're good at. Like, we were having a conversation probably like a month ago now. You and I were talking about Waffle House. Like, Waffle House just understands its place in the marketplace. They just understand their place. It's late night eats. It's after you're out having a nice night out, you're having a little bit of fun. Why don't you come here? We're open 24/7. Have a good time. At least that's how a lot of people, certainly here in the Midwest, do. It's a lot different in the South, especially in Atlanta. Waffle House is like five-star dining in the ATL. They love Waffle House. But I think a lot of it is just like really leaning into what you are. And I do feel like to what you were saying, Chili's is just really leaned into what they are. Cheap drinks, appetizers, fair prices, good time. And that's just, that's something now everybody can wrap their arms around.
I think, I will say, I don't know that Chili's is my go-to, but it's probably near the top of the heap for my chain restaurant.
What's your favorite chain? Like, my favorite chain is Red Lobster. I would say honorable mention. I really like Outback. I think Outback is good. I can get a good steak. I get a side. I get a big loaf of bread. I get that all for like, what, $25? I can live with that. I mean, that's not a place I would go all the time, but I don't mind a good Outback.
I think if I was creating like a, this is the Olympics. We'll do a bronze, silver, and gold. I think gold is probably Chili's. Texas Roadhouse either pulls the bronze or the silver, and then Olive Garden. Like, those are the three where it's like, all right, if you were to convince me to go to a chain restaurant, those are the three you could get me in the door. But I do usually end up at Chili's once or twice a year. Now it's, you know, we're not getting reservations. Me and my wife are like, hey, we got nothing else to do. Let's go to Chili's. But I do end up at Chili's a good amount over the course of a year.
Text line 913-586-7965. You guys see my Tigers yesterday? There's two kind of people. You can talk about the fact that they almost blew a 21-point lead with 8 minutes to go in the second half, or you could talk about how they won the game.
1.8 to play. Mitchell, a baseball pass. Intercepted. Throwing it up is Tucker off the rim. He missed it. He intercepted it on the other side of half court, threw it up off the catch. It hit the rim, and Missouri survives at home. 81-80.
I don't care. Yesterday was not pretty. It was not fun. It was very stressful in the final 20 minutes of the game. I don't care at this point. That's not the way the NCAA tournament committee, they don't care about that. You know what they see? You beat Vanderbilt. Missouri is just, they're going to be on the bubble all year. I would actually at this point be very surprised if Missouri was able to avoid Dayton. If they make the NCAA tournament, they're going to have to fight their way in Dayton. And it's going to be a Tuesday in front of 4,000 people, and they're going to be playing TCU. Like, that's the way that this is going to turn out for Missouri. At this point, I don't care. You live to play another day. They got to go on the road to play Arkansas this weekend. I mean, they're probably going to lose on the road at Arkansas. If you go 1-1 every week, if you're Missouri, you got a chance. That simple. If you can go 1-1 every week to end the rest of the season, if you're Missouri, I believe you are going to make the NCAA tournament. I do. I do think they'll be on the right side of the bubble there. I do think they are trending towards being a team that's going to play in Dayton. Let me play for you guys what Dennis Gates had to say. Here's his reaction to the final play.
First, I said, oh, because because Mark threw the ball short, right? You don't want to use all your timeouts. But that's not the pass we want. And Mark Mitchell's parents, his dad, even said something. He said, son, I got to teach you how to throw. Because that pass, and Mark knew, Mark threw some long passes before. But in that, it just credits our conference. It credits the fight that our guys have, the resilience. We did not break. We did not break. And that's the most important part when you are in games, one possession at a time. Yes, we were up 20. Who in here did not watch the Oklahoma-Vanderbilt game? We knew they would make a run. And our guys, they may have bent a little bit, but we did not break.
Hey, okay. All right. You know what? I don't care. I'm not going to come on here and complain. There's two kind of people. You can complain about the fact that, I mean, they were up 21 points with 8 minutes to go and had a chance to lose the game at home. You could be mad about that, or you could be happy they beat a ranked opponent. They put another quad one win in the books, and they continue to get closer to making the NCAA tournament. I have determined which side I'm on. I don't care. They won the game. Ultimately, that's all that matters. Coming up at the top of the hour, Mike Tannenbaum, who used to be the general manager of the Jets, he said, oh, we got Matt Tate coming up. My apologies. I forgot Matt Tate. My bad. That's my fault. Matt Tate of the Lawrence Journal World is going to be on the show covering KU. We'll talk about Darren Peterson next. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.